This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oh, what a night. OKC fans were maybe getting nervous there midway through the fourth quarter, but we did not have a repeat of game one. The Thunder get it done as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Lots to get to over the course of the next couple hours, but congrats to you on the Tyrese Haliburton under, first and foremost.
Congrats. Broken clock twice a day. The baseball night was not as profitable or fun, but still, at least Tyrese Haliburton got there, and we will see if the Pacers can extend this thing out one more.
Yes, one of many items that we have to get to today on the program, so let's start, kick it off the way that we always do. Time for the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
In addition to all of the NBA action, as we kick off our top three items today on the program, the Cup is in the building. JVT, game six of the Stanley Cup final tonight. And we have seen a slight move toward the home favorite Panthers from minus 140 out to minus 155 this morning. So the market does think this thing ends tonight for the Panthers.
Cup's in the building and it will be awarded tonight. I'm sorry to say this thing ends this evening. It should have ended a little bit earlier in the series. Florida has nobody to blame but themselves, but still can get it done this evening at home. And maybe that's what they were planning all along. But regardless, I think the cup is not only in the building, but it is lifted today.
Well, if it gets awarded tonight, let it also be Sam Bennett lifting up a Conn Smythe trophy as well. Please, sweet 8-pound, 6-ounce newborn infant Jesus. Didn't even know a word yet. Edmonton, by the way, plus 135 dogs in Sunrise. And it looks like Stuart Skinner will be back in net for the Oilers, so we'll discuss that rationale and a lot more when we get into it. 12:30 Eastern, Bob Wischusen, ESPN play-by-play man, he's going to join us, help us break it down as well. Less scoring, however, in Omaha yesterday in what was potentially the best pitching performance we have ever seen in the tournament. Gage Wood, Arkansas pitcher, no-hits Murray State in an elimination game to win 3-0, 19 strikeouts in the win.
Yep, good performance, obviously. Very fun game when you're watching and if you like pitching. And we also have the resumption this morning of a contest between LSU and UCLA that we could keep our eye on too. So we are getting down to the nitty and the gritty out there in the Haw, as the kids call it.
I liked postgame when he was asked about the moment. He just said, shouldn't have hit that guy. Because that's what takes away the perfect game in the eighth inning, hit by a pitch. Yes, but UCLA, LSU got rained out last night. They restarted this morning. Two more games on deck this afternoon. And then as we kicked off the show, OKC is now just one win away from an NBA title themselves. So the cup might get awarded tonight, and the Larry O'Brien might be delivered here soon as well. Thunder take game five, 120-109, go up 3-2 in the series. OKC does cover that 9.5, although came down to the final possession on the cover. Yep. Total goes over as well here.
Yeah, so there's, I think, a lot that you can take from this at this point right now. I don't know where you start. I don't want to start with Tyrese Haliburton. It's a mouth breather topic when you're talking about his standing and after a performance like that. We should talk about it, but I don't think you start. I think what you start with is, since game one, a game in which the Oklahoma City Thunder blew to the Indiana Pacers, the Thunder are 3-1 straight up and against the spread. They have outscored the Indiana Pacers in the series by about 6 points per 100 possessions. They have, by all accounts, since game two, been the team that we all pretty much expected them to be, especially from a defensive performance. Game three, a defensive outlier in every single one of these series. They have been a dominant defensive team, and that, to me, is like the sticking point. Jensen and Dave this morning asked me about, like, hey, you know, essentially what sticks out now that we're through five games. Yeah. The offensive rating for the Indiana Pacers through five games in this series is the equivalent of the offensive rating for the Portland Trailblazers in the regular season. They've done nothing in this series from an offensive standpoint outside of one game. If you look at their offensive rating in transition, Stormy, their offensive rating off of live rebounds in transition in the postseason prior to the finals, 135.9, first by a mile. In the finals, less than a point per play. It's abysmal. They have not been able to figure out what the Thunder are doing defensively. And I think it's reminiscent of the Denver series, right? We talked about that a ton where you saw them blow game one, but you saw them consistently throughout that series play defense at an extremely high level, and they've done it again here. And now in three games in OKC, Indiana's done absolutely nothing on offense, and they're on the verge of getting eliminated.
Well, it's like the Pacers in game one were just unbelievable in the clutch, which we've seen so many times. So they steal one on the road there. They come back home, win one at home, as we expected them to do. And now OKC is really showing who they are. And I don't know if you agree with this, but to me, I felt like that was the game last night specifically for the Thunder was kind of the most prototypical OKC, like classic game where the offense and defense all came together. 27 combined blocks and steals last night. Seven different guys had a block. Seven different guys had a steal. Led to a lot of those runouts and easy looks at the rim. 32 points off turnovers compared to just 9 for Indiana. Like, all of those things defensively that we have expected for the Thunder were out there on display last night.
That and the other guys showed up. Like, it was finally, to your point, like a complete game, what we've been waiting for this team. Jalen Williams.
I was going to say, we haven't even mentioned Jalen Williams yet.
Right, and that's like the whole thing, right? This is what we've kind of been waiting for. If you've been watching this postseason, if you've been tracking what the Thunder have been doing, what is the thing that we have hit on the head 1,000 times on this show? Road struggles, role players, like, those have not been consistent. The three-point shooting for this team has not been consistent. None of this has been anywhere near what we saw from that team in the regular season. By the way, should know, with all of that being said, they're still one win away from winning the NBA Finals, which shows you how good this team is. But to the point, right? Jalen Williams, last three games has been very good. Last night was incredible. 40 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 14 to 25 shooting. Absolutely brilliant. He balances that out with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who has 31, 2 and 10, 9 of 21 shooting. Even Chet Holmgren, 9 and 11 is pretty muted, but was impactful defensively as well. Like, this was a final, like, finally, this was a balanced and complete team effort. This is the game that I think a lot of people have been waiting for this Oklahoma City team. This is the team that many expected to show up in this finals, and they're finally starting to get it together. Now, they have to go on the road, where they still have only covered one game, but yesterday was finally that moment where you're like, oh, like, that complete team is finally showing up here.
SGA and Jalen Williams both now averaging 30 points per game the last three games. Yep. So, to your point about the way the series has turned, those two pieces, a huge part of it. And to go a little deeper on Shai here, too, 31 points, 10 assists, 4 blocks, 2 steals. First player to have an offensive and defensive stat line like that in the finals since they started tracking blocks in 1974. 10th straight 30-point game, 15th overall this season, which ties Kobe for the second most such games in a single postseason, trailing only 1995 Hakeem Olajuwon and 1992 Michael Jordan, who had 16 in their respective finals. That's pretty damn good company to
be in. Yeah, of course. It's brilliant. Like, and it's so, I mean, I don't want to, how do we put this? We'll get to our MVP finals ladder a little bit later. Shai's going to win finals MVP, right, in the many times that you simulate it. You could make a really strong argument for Jalen Williams, the way that he has been playing. We can get to that. But Williams finally showing up, I thought, was great. And this was the big part about it, too, is running the offense. Some of the shots, I was texting with Kelly Bidlin last night. I mean, he has at one point, I think it was the fourth quarter, maybe it was late third, this incredible high layup off the top of the glass that goes in. He was commanding the offense. He's going north-south. He's getting to within 4 feet of the basket. He's facilitating here and there as well. Williams was absolutely brilliant and arguably outshined Shai, despite the fact that he did have over 30 points. It was a big reason why they were able to do it. And he did it on both sides. He was brilliant on defense, too. It was very impressive, I thought, what they did yesterday. Even in the third quarter, when T.J. McConnell's going insane, the exciting white going all over the place. Pascal Siakam held some cut it to 4 in the fourth quarter or 2, if I remember correctly. And even then, they calm down, they come out, and they extend the lead back out, and they end up covering the game. That was a very impressive performance for OKC.
Because you mentioned McConnell, he has 18 points on the night, 13 in the fourth quarter, and Rick Carlisle still has him on the bench for 7 minutes of that because you want to give your star and Tyrese Halliburton an opportunity to be out there on the court, even though he was terrible. So is it time to talk about Tyrese Halliburton now?
Sure, of course.
And of course, the injury plays into that. He did injure his calf in the second quarter, but how did you – I mean, 0-for from the floor in the game. And speaking of how Jalen Williams was driving the basket, somebody who was nowhere near doing that was Halliburton last night.
Yeah, so I think there's – look, just like everything, there's truth and, like, nuance to things, right? We can go in the middle. We don't have to go to just, hey, this guy's a bum and a fraud and overrated, which generally our conversations nowadays just tend to fall on the extremes. Tyrese Halliburton wasn't good. I thought he was passive at times. I thought, especially before we knew about the calf injury, there were times where he could maybe try to make shots. He had open looks that he didn't hit. Also, at the same time, he's dealing with a calf injury and facing the best defense in the NBA that has multiple defenders that are getting in his face. We've talked about this a ton here on this show, too. All right, congrats. You have finally worked to get the switch that you want. You go from Lu Dort as your defender to Alex Caruso, or you go from Lu Dort to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Jalen Williams. These are all very good, very above-average on-ball defenders. There's no weak link. There's no mismatch to hunt. He has to be better. Mm-hmm. He also has an injury. And he was also defended extremely well. I think all of those points are true for Tyrese Halliburton at this point when you watch that game. Yeah, you'd want more. He was also defended extremely well, and he's injured.
So is it over for the Pacers?
I mean, look, they're a really good team. They're going back home where they are very effective, and their opponent has been ineffective just on the road in general. I would generally say yes. Like, I think that Indiana is going to go out, put in a spirited effort, but lose the game on Thursday. So I think that this is over for Indiana in that sense. I think OKC wins on the road.
I agree. And I think if Halliburton is still dealing with some of those calf issues, and this is a quicker turnaround game, this isn't the long layoff between games, that it's going to be game over, because as good as Pascal Siakam is, you can't run everything through him, because sure, you'll get the points, you'll get the rebounds, you'll get other things, but you're also going to get the turnovers, which were on display for him last night as well with six.
Yes. And what's going to be interesting, I think, as we move forward in the Indiana, outside of the X's and O's things, is what is the market going to do with this game? I was bothering you guys last night and texting you about this, because I was also asking Kelly and Zach, what do you think is going to happen, or what do you think the line's going to be here for this next game? And I think there's going to be a universe in which we're both right. And what I say that is, when we were texting for audience, you said six. I actually said 3.5 and was like, maybe 4.5 is more fair. It opened six. We're now at five. And I would venture a guess that the market's going to really play this angle of desperation, and we're probably going to close about 4.5, 4.
Okay.
So I'll be very curious to see if that's
respect
where it is.
Respect at home in a closeout game.
Sure, in a desperation spot. And if we're talking about 4.5, 4, I think that's a play on the Oklahoma City.
Meanwhile, that has not been the case for the Edmonton Oilers. They are not getting a ton of respect in their potential closeout game coming up later on tonight. Florida getting bet. We'll get into that. We'll talk more NBA Finals. I mentioned Bob Wischusen will be joining us this hour. We'll also have betting analyst Doug Kazarian on the show in hour two. He'll talk a little more NBA. Also, a big card in the W tonight. But first, when we return, elimination games on the Diamond in Omaha. We'll discuss a little bit about what transpired yesterday and get into a little Stanley Cup final talk. Don't go anywhere. More Money Moves after this.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Heard of Xcuta? If you're into futures wagering, fantasy, or just the thrill of calling your shot, you need to check it out. It's Xcuta, X-C-U-T-T-A. Basically, the future of how we play. Think of it like combining a live auction with the strategy of sports betting. You choose who you want to bid on, players, teams, golfers, even horse racing. Over 1,000 athletes and teams to choose from across every major sport. You set the terms, build your own auction, and invite your friends to come play. You can even start auctions for free. It's like creating your own mini sports book with your own crew. Here's the hookup. Email support@xcuta.com. Mention VSiN in the email. They'll send you a special 3-month player promo code to get started. Again, that's Xcuta, X-C-U-T-T-A. Futures wagering just got a serious upgrade. Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel. And I'm a little bit nervous because in the commercial break, you said you have something that's going to be, what was the term, doubly bad for me tonight? What does that mean?
Well, usually the term is best of both worlds. I did not use doubly bad because that's not English. I said worst of both worlds.
Worst of both worlds.
For you.
Okay.
I'm going to read something to you. The series obviously isn't over. Let me make this dramatic. The series obviously isn't over. But I don't know why Brad Marchand isn't the favorite to win the Conn Smythe. Yes, Sam Bennett has 15 goals, and that's obviously great. However, Marchand has scored the two biggest goals of the playoffs for Florida. Without his Game 3 overtime goal against Toronto with the Panthers down 2-0 in the series, they likely wouldn't be here. He also added the overtime winner in Game 2 in Edmonton to keep the Cats from falling down 2-0 in the series. And who knows what would have happened in Games 3 and 4 if the Oilers had a 2-0 series lead. 10 goals, 10 assists, superior penalty killing, and an insanely good plus 18, plus minus rating for the playoffs with 6 goals, including a, I don't know, a PPG and SHG. What is that?
Points per game.
And shorthanded goal,
shorthanded,
I would assume, yep.
Yeah.
And 2 game winners in this series alone. If the voters are looking at the whole picture and not just seeing 15 goals, Marchand is a big moment player and an obvious choice to win the Conn Smythe at this point.
Disagree on obvious choice.
All right, Chris Felik is not allowed on the show anymore.
No, love the bear.
I was hoping you'd be like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, so I could bait you.
Disagree on obvious choice. I do think plus 450 is an interesting price, and I added a little bit to it, which is, I think, necessary. If he has another moment where he, like, scores the game winner tonight or something like that, then I think it goes to him. But 15 goals don't just go away. Are you telling me that the Florida Panthers are winning games if he's not scoring 15 goals this postseason. I don't think that's true either. He does have more points. He's got five more goals in the postseason as well. And he's had some impactful moments here too, including an assist on a very important goal when we were in Omaha. So I think Sam Bennett is the rightful choice. I think he's odds on for a number. I think the Brad Marchand at plus 450 is the only bet that you can make in the Conn Smythe market right now if you think Florida wins, though.
Okay. Good rebuttal.
Fair?
I just wanted to hear your rebuttal, yeah.
I think Sam Bennett needs to win it.
Well, I mean, if I were to remove your...
So here, I'm all over the place, y'all. I have Edmonton in the series. Yeah. I hedged with the Sam Bennett 20-1 Conn Smythe early in the set. And then yesterday, I was forced to put a little bit on Brad Marchand. So I'm going to be profitable with the way that this works out. But I don't love that I had to, that I felt compelled to add something because of the potential. And Marchand's been getting a lot of love nationally.
Yes.
So that concerns me a little bit, especially at his age, especially with him being this trade deadline acquisition that's come through and just been, I don't want to say missing piece because obviously Florida won a cup last year, but really pushed them over the edge to be in the position that they're at where they've looked so dominant right now. And to Bear's point, he's had some impactful goals. So he's gotten that national narrative on his side.
Yeah.
Which scares me a little bit, so I had to play some on it.
Yeah, it's always the question of the weight of the goals versus the quantity, right? You know, we had this conversation. Was it game three, right? It was the one they won 6-1 or whatever it was, and Sam Bennett scored like a breakaway goal to make it 4-1 in a runaway game. And after that game, his odds, that was the only thing that he did in that game, if I remember correctly, and then he shot to the favorite. And I even asked you the next day, like, really, like, I understand why he's the favorite, but not a meaningless goal, but a goal that doesn't carry as much weight as an overtime winner or anything like that. That's really what pushes him over the top to be the favorite to win this thing. And maybe that's part of the pushback you're seeing on this, which is if you weight the goals, their importance, and when they came, maybe the gap between him and Marchand is not as wide as maybe the odds would indicate.
Correct. And I think that's where we go to with this number, as the Bear sends me a heart emoji with your name next to it. Gross. Bear, I love you too, though, okay? Come on. But at that point in the series specifically, though, I think that's where you have to be reminded that it is a playoff award in its entirety and not just the Stanley Cup final. Yes, this is recency bias when it comes to this point of the postseason. And that's why I say tonight, if Marchand goes off or he has, like, another moment and they win, I think that you probably have to give it to him. That's why we've seen even more movement in this market. Plus 450 yesterday. It's plus 370 this morning. So people are playing Marchand today.
I guess I'm not entirely surprised. Yesterday when we were on, it was 7-1 for Draisaitl, 8-1 for McDavid. I feel pretty adamant that Draisaitl should have a larger gap between him and Connor. I think he's been the more impactful player, especially when you consider the last three games. But I guess it is somewhat tempting that if you think Edmonton can win out here, to have a 8-1 on Connor McDavid does make sense, at least in terms of the desire to have.
And I've talked to you about the 32 Thoughts podcast before. Yep. Elliot Freeman, a bunch of like Sportsnet NHL insiders go on, and I was listening to the podcast the other day, and he did his top three for Conn Smythe, and his top three was Sam Bennett, Brad Marchand, and Connor McDavid. And I think that's because of, again, just more narrative thought process there. And he did have a goal last game, but to your point, he hasn't been great. Here's the thing about Connor McDavid that's so funny. He's got 5 points in five games. I think it's more than that, right? Yeah. No, it's 5 points in five games. He's got 5 points in five games. So for anybody else, that would be a great final, right? For anyone. But because he's Connor McDavid and he's not playing to the caliber of the best player in the world, people are acting like he's had a bad series. He's been fine. But fine Connor McDavid isn't going to win you a cup, and I think that's part of the problem. With the with tonight being such an impactful game.
By the way, I think it's 7 points.
Is it seven?
Yeah, he's got a point in each of the last two games, and he had five.
Because he had the goal.
Two.
Yeah, and he had the goal last game. Mm-hmm. So he did, and he finally had a goal, so that was big, although too little too late. When it comes to the points tonight, though, I would say if you think Edmonton has any chance or if Edmonton's going to make this a game, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are the people that you're looking at. So maybe it's the 1.5 points or something like that to get you on the plus side of things for his props. But I've gone back and forth. Can Edmonton win tonight? Would I love it for them to force a game seven and have this thing go the distance? I think they're fully capable. Will they is another question. And Florida is so good and they're on home ice and they've been rolling their lines. We talk so much about Marchand. He's on their third line.
Yeah.
And they're playing to this level.
I mean, I would think I look, it's only two games, so it's always a small sample size in general anyway. But the two games in Florida, you talk about being non-existent. He really was, right? One assist. They were minus two in his time on the ice. We don't, with the strategic advantage of being at home, right, if you're Florida, especially defensively, and being able to match that line, like, it seems like Florida's got not an answer, but a pretty good handle on how to match up with McDavid when they're playing at home. Like, those two games at home, you nailed the desperation spot in the overtime winner. Even then, he only had four shots and one assist in that game.
Yeah.
It wasn't even too effective of a contest, it would seem, for Connor McDavid in the grand scheme of things. Is that advantage something that actually plays into it? They've been playing at home for Florida, being able to handle that line?
I do.
Yeah.
I think that the way that Florida defensively has come out here has been a huge difference. We came into the series knowing they had the better goaltender, knowing top to bottom certain things about Edmonton have been problematic for them for years, but they just weren't really showing up in other series, and I think now they are. And it's in the most impactful series that you can ask for. It's unfortunate that these things are showing up for them. I was curious your opinion, though, because you've had a lot of interest in the goaltending situation. Bringing Stuart Skinner back for this start, and I see the brow on your face.
Well, it's just a look. Like, again, I won't pretend to know the intricacies of goaltending. I just find it interesting that Skinner had this long leash, right, where we're watching my man give up 3 and 4 goals regularly, and it's like, well, let's just give him some time. Let's wait until we're down 3-0 in a big game to pull him. And then Pickard comes out, helps them win that game and come back, is awful, and then it's like, nope, we're done. Can't do it, buddy. I just don't understand the love here. I mean, I think you have two goaltenders that are very similar to one another. Is that fair? Like, I don't think there's one big edge or another, but I don't know. Maybe it's just throw them out there. Are there numbers for game 6, Skinner?
Are there numbers for game 6?
No, I mean, like,
we've talked about that, right? Mr. Game 4, or Mr. Game 5, excuse me. But we've talked about with him, though, the games 4 through 7 numbers in general for him have been much better. And I think if he can play like he did the last time he came back into the lineup, maybe it's a reality, not that you should need a reality check in the Stanley Cup freaking final, but a reality check moment, if you can play back to that caliber, and if you think Stuart Skinner is your goaltender going into next year, you probably feel like you need to give that opportunity to him.
It feels desperate, right, when you're just sitting there switching them back and forth.
This is my biggest concern for the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah. I mean, the chances that you're giving up defensively are a huge part of that. But in net, to have that be your question in an elimination game, that we have to go back and forth on who our goaltender is not a recipe for
success. Does he get benched tonight?
Oh, God, why would you put that
in? If they go down like 3-0
again. I say no. I think we're going to get a close game tonight. God help us.
That sounded very confident.
Panthers, -155 favorites tonight, total 6.5. We'll get more into it next. Bob Wischusen joining the program coming up.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Will the Stanley Cup final end tonight, or can the Edmonton Oilers find a little elimination game magic? The Cup is in the house in Sunrise for Game 6 coming out tonight. Florida, pretty significant favorite in this one. Total 6.5. All of the games that we've seen so far in the series have had 7 goals or more. Thrilled to have Bob Wischusen here on the Progressive Guest Line to help us talk it all over today. It was excellent calling games on ESPN this NHL postseason. Also covers college football for ESPN, golf, basketball, is the home voice of the New York Jets as well in the NFL. Bob, I'm going to start here just by asking you plainly, is this thing over tonight? Do the Florida Panthers close it out?
I don't think so. Seems to me like this thing is destined to go 7. I picked them in 7, so I guess I have to stick with my prediction. But, every time that I think the series is going to go one way or the other, it goes the opposite. So why wouldn't the road team win the last 2 games? So, but, could they win it tonight? Of course. I think they're the better team. I mean, they are the ultimate pain in the rear-end team to play against. There can't be a less enjoyable team for an opponent to play against than the Panthers, and I think we can see that, the Oilers right now are having as little fun as you can possibly have in the Stanley Cup final.
Bob, Connor McDavid was pretty quiet in the 2 games at Florida. Why is that? Do you think that there is something that Edmonton can do to free him up here on the road tonight?
Hard tonight because being the road team, you don't get the final change. So, to me, what's the number one reason that Connor McDavid hasn't been Connor McDavid? Probably Alexander Barkov would be reason number one. And then after him, maybe Atu Lostarainen or Sam Bennett or Brad Marchand or, you know, like go down the list and pick the number of guys that play for Florida that play what they know is playoff hockey, which is we are going to put a shoulder and a body and a stick in your midsection and your chest, and we are going to be so physical for four lines for 60 straight minutes that you're just not going to get the open ice and the transition on the rush opportunities against us that you get against other teams. There's just no time and space because they're so relentless with how they play. And it's really a testament to Bill Zito, who, like, he seems to recognize and see through the statistics and see that he has guys on his team that in the playoffs are better and more valuable playing playoff hockey than guys that score two and three times the number of points that his players score during the regular season. But get into playoff hockey and their style, and all four lines just blend together so wonderfully that, you know, there's no room out there for Draisaitl and McDavid to be Draisaitl and McDavid the way they are in the regular season.
Yeah, that game not only translates so well to the postseason, but to your point, they elevate it. And meanwhile, on the Oilers side, we've talked about it. I think I underestimated the loss of Zach Hyman a little bit too much, that I thought the Oilers were going to be fine. How much has his absence impacted what they try to do defensively in particular?
Yeah, I'd like to say a lot, but I don't know that that would necessarily be giving the Panthers enough credit as well. Like, Zach Hyman was the number one hits leader in the postseason. He had more hits, I think, through three rounds, like through the conference final, before he got hurt, than he did in totality in an 82-game regular season. You know, like, whatever, they played 18, 19, 20 games through the first three rounds. So he was hitting people at triple the rate in the playoffs than he did during the regular season. So clearly he was trying to take his game and do what the Panthers do, which is step it up physically, get in your face, be relentless, be all over on the forecheck, make guys, you know, pay for every play that they make, and hopefully that wears you down over a seven-game series. I don't know how many guys for Edmonton can say that they have done the same, triple the rate of physicality from the regular season to the postseason. But even that net front presence that he provides, even that physicality, you know, I don't know. Like, the collective of the Panthers just absorbs that. I don't know that he'd be able to stand in front of their net, because nobody really is able to comfortably stand in front of the Panthers' net in the playoffs. So, yeah, they're really a really well-thought-out roster for playoff hockey.
All right, speaking of the net minder for Edmonton changed once again. We get Stuart Skinner back between the pipes. I was telling Stormy, I feel like it's just not a really great look. You're just switching out goaltenders, trying to desperately find something that works. What do you make of Skinner back between the pipes?
Yeah, I mean, both of these guys have had their moments. Both, obviously, against the team, the quality of the Panthers, have struggled. Like, the last time I was with Stormy, she was a better shot blocker than at times.
Well, I was going to ask about that. We got to get to that, yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, Stormy ate a puck the last time I was with her. Like, it was incredible. Like, she just didn't flinch. I mean, you know, like, take some guts. I've worked with Ryan Callahan. He hadn't knelt down in front of shots with the courage that Stormy showed the last time I was with her. So hopefully Stuart Skinner does a little bit of that tonight to keep the series going.
You're the worst.
Can I try my – I've made the joke already a million times, Bob, but since you're here, I have to try it on you, which is VGK had more shots on Stormy in that series than they did on net.
That was true. That was true. They had won.
It's not that. You're right. It's not that far from the truth.
To follow up, though, on the Skinner element of it, Bobrovsky on the other side has had some great games and then had some where Edmonton still gets theirs. Every single game in this series, we've seen seven or more goals, even if it's just coming at the end in garbage time. Do you think that we continue to see that type of goal-scoring production, or in kind of an elimination game, are things finally going to play tighter and closer to the vest like we expected maybe earlier in the series?
Yeah, I mean, if a game is played really tight and close to the vest, then that's not Edmonton playing the way that they need to play to be at their best. Or, like, they need to get the game end-to-end. They need the game in the open ice. But then, of course, if you do that, you risk giving up chances at your end, and you have to depend on your goaltender at times to bail you out, because if you're sending, you know, forward lines in waves aggressively at the other team, and that's what Edmonton can do. Right, we saw that against Vegas. Right, there were times in the series that we called where it almost, you see from Vegas' standpoint, they were like underwater. All they were trying to do was survive in their own end, get it out to the neutral zone, and get the next forward group on after a change and say, all right, like, we couldn't get it done, boys. Your turn. You give it a try against these guys, because they're just coming at us in waves. And when they get to their game and it's like a rock rolling downhill that you can't stop, but in doing that, especially against a team that counters as well as Florida does, you're probably going to give up some chances at the other end, and that means your goaltender has to be ready to bail you out. Is Skinner good enough to do that for them? If this game is 2-1 tonight, I don't know. Like, that's, to me, playing to the Panthers' strength more so than the Oilers' strength. I would think the Oilers have a better chance of winning a game that goes over than a game that stays under. And the trend in this series has been, right, for the games to go over. Like, they're scoring goals. So he needs to be special. They don't really have, you know, normally against a team as good as Florida, you would want a Bobrovsky. Like, you would want to have that guy that's been there, done it before, playoff pedigree, you know what you're getting. They clearly have just kind of gone back and forth in this series, trying to, as best they can, ride whichever guy is hot for however long he stays hot until they're forced to make a change again. So it has to be unnerving to be sitting there if you're, you know, Chris Knobloch, saying, oh, like, I'm not really sure which guy to start tonight, and I'm not really sure of the guy that I start tonight what I'm going to get.
Bob, last 90 seconds, who is the leader for Conn Smythe at this point in your mind?
I mean, at this point, it probably has to be a kind of a two-horse race, I would think, between Bennett and Bobrovsky. I mean, if the Panthers win, obviously, if you know, Edmonton wins, they have to win two more games. And in those two games, that would probably determine it, right? I mean, you're probably going to have either a Draisaitl or a McDavid does something ridiculously special, and they just salt it away. It's hard to imagine it wouldn't be one of those two guys. Now if Brad Marchand has like a hat trick in tonight or something, then maybe he wins it, because he's been almost as productive as Bennett. And of course, if you really crawl inside the game, the analytics, you know, the impact that guys have when the statistics and the box score don't necessarily always tell the story, then you could always give it to like a Forsling or a Barkov, because those guys are just so incredibly good at all of the little things that help you win. And, you know, I don't know, if some voter looked at like time on ice, Barkov versus McDavid, and what McDavid's doing when Barkov is out there as opposed to when he's not out there, you know, maybe that would tell a different story. But statistically, to me, it's Bennett or Bobrovsky.
Bob, thank you so much for the time, buddy. We appreciate you. Talk to you soon.
Keep blocking shots for me.
Bob Issues and everybody at ESPN, appreciate the time. We got to take a quick timeout. Coming up next, we are wrapping up hour one. Don't miss it.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Reminder, VSiN fans, If you are someone who likes to play Circa Survivor or the Circa Million contest, you can do so for free this season, potentially. Winner Circle Proxy, giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest, plus full proxy service. And get this, you'll get to be paired up with a VSiN host for strategy all season long as well. Enter now for your chance to win at winnercircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnercircleproxy.com/VSIN. And the odds market for Conn Smythe, just to follow up on our conversation last segment with Bob Wischusen, is all over the place again this morning. Both of us, when Wischusen mentioned Bobrovsky as it being the two-horse race, we both, like, looked at each other a little bit panicked. Like, because I thought he was saying Marchand and Sam Bennett, which is where the odds market certainly is right now as well.
Well, and it's also at odds. It's not even our own thoughts, right? We had Greg Wischinski on in Omaha. And he had discussed that I had to follow up and say, you didn't even mention Bobrovsky. And he's like, no, like maybe he gets a third place vote. So that I think is pretty interesting, because when you look at Bobrovsky, again, he did not win the Conn Smythe last year, but was in contention for it. Can you pull up the results of the award if we have that? Because the reason why I want to bring this up is he was very good in the postseason last year, Bobrovsky. He is statistically having a better postseason this year than he did last year. Save percentage at this point is better than it was last year. The goals against average is better than it was last year. So, again, I know he didn't win it, but he did have a very strong postseason, and it is a postseason award. It is not just the Stanley Cup final.
Correct. It's a full postseason award. Yeah. Looking at the Conn Smythe results from last year, and I forgot about it. Like, Barkov had a great series. Yeah. He was the second pick on everybody's ballot last year. Bobrovsky got some love in the third place spot, but McDavid was the unanimous choice, despite being on the losing team in that one, followed by Barkov in the voting.
So I think it's funny because
near unanimous.
I think you felt this way too. I was somewhat surprised by Wischinski's dismissal of Bobrovsky, but, and I don't know if you thought this, but I then kind of just took that as gospel. It was like, okay, cool, he's out. And so now to hear Wischinski come in and say like, oh yeah, I think it's down between those two guys. I could believe it when you're talking about a goaltender who has given up less than 2.3 goals per game and has saved 91% of the shots that he's faced in this postseason.
Yeah, he's been awesome. But I think you've also had a couple of those, I don't want to say clunker with regards to Bobrovsky, but but that's like the word that comes to mind for me, that he's had a couple of times. And in this series, yes, you expect the high-end talent guys on Edmonton to get theirs, but when you're having a game where you lose 5-4, it's hard to then go say, okay, yeah, let's give you this honor about how great you've been when you're giving up 5 goals in a game.
Right. So in 3 of the 4 games, he has given up 4 or more goals, but then 2 of the last 3, again, how you slice it, he has given up 2 or fewer. So
you look at the odds board right now. I told you while we had Bob Wischusen on the air, I was just looking at it, and Bobrovsky's number was from 50-1 to 100-1 just during the time of that segment. At the top, Sam Bennett now just -120. Brad Marchand getting played a lot, +260, the price right there. I know you gave all of the details from our guy Chris Felica earlier, who is somebody that has a 50-1 Marchand ticket in pocket as well. Good on him. When he texted me about that a week or so ago, I was like, it's a good number to have on that guy. And I had to sprinkle on him. I mentioned a +450. Don't love that I had to do that, but I think it's very much so in play. We are all rooting for Sam Bennett to have a night tonight. Now, how sad is this? Like, narrative-wise, I want Edmonton to win, but I win more money if Florida gets one of these guys home now.
What's the worst possible outcome for you? Florida wins and, like, Bobrovsky wins it?
I would be very, very unhappy.
You're in a very good position. You're fine.
I would be a miserable person to be around if that were to be the way that thing played out. Okay, let's get to a little bit of NFL talk here, which I know is strange. We've got the NBA Finals and NHL Stanley Cup Finals going on, but the NFL is king. It rules the world. We got mini camps that are going on right now, so there's always stuff coming out. It is the final week of mini camp. We had 28 of them that have already wrapped up, 4 more that are ongoing right now. The Kansas City Chiefs, Ravens, Los Angeles Rams, New York Giants. Giants, one of 8 teams, JVT. who last year finished dead last in their respective divisions. While I don't see it being them, almost every year we do see a team that goes from worst to first in their respective division. Last year, we actually didn't get one, just the third time since 2002 that was the case. And I think it's natural to say the 49ers are the lowest hanging fruit to do so this year.
Yeah.
Won six games a year ago, are now favored to win the NFC West this season. But any other team that you really think could make a charge for worst to first from a year ago to now?
Well, I think the most obvious answer outside of the 49ers, like you mentioned, with everything that we know about them in terms of preseason odds, is the Chicago Bears. And it's not even so much a pro Bears take, which I do believe in Chicago to an extent. I like their investment in the offensive line. I am a Caleb Williams guy. I think the skill positions, I'm not saying anything crazy here, are very good. The improvements they made with the roster, I think, are good enough. I also think you can make an argument that with Green Bay, Minnesota, potentially Detroit taking a step back, we know about Ragnar not being there, the coordinators being gone, that there is a slide down to the mean for Detroit and Minnesota and Green Bay and Chicago taking a step forward. That if we're talking about these teams, that if we're just keeping it to the teams that, hey, finished last to get up to first, I think by default it has to be Chicago as the second most likely team to do that, and the odds would indicate that as well.
I'm in total agreement with you. Our producer, Brian Ortega, actually had us kind of rank in order of which teams we thought were most likely to, and we both went 1-2, 49ers, Chicago Bears. I think that a very consequential, in a good way, addition to their team is Ben Johnson. And what is he going to do as the new head coach of this group and shape around Caleb Williams and all of the other things that you already mentioned? Three is where we had different options, and we just flipped them. I actually put the Patriots three, who I know you have been very high on. You put the Titans. What gave you Tennessee as the edge between those two?
No, it's the division, right? So the Patriots at the top of their division have a monster that they would have to overcome to go from worst to first. It's the Buffalo Bills. The Bills, I think their roster is very good. I think you can point to certain things like their secondary. You know, I was writing the AFC East for the NFL Guide. You look at some of the granular details of what their secondary did last year. It actually wasn't particularly great. So there are some weaknesses, but for the most part, it is, I think, more unlikely that the Patriots can upend Buffalo to take the actual mantle of first, where the Titans are just in a really weak division. And we don't look, the expectation is that a rookie quarterback doesn't hit the ground running, but we've also seen rookie quarterbacks do it. And so what if Cam Ward comes out and is this year's Jaden Daniels or the year before's C.J. Stroud, where all of a sudden he's outperforming many expectations, is exactly what you expect for a number one overall pick, and in a weak division, which nine wins might win it for you?
Yeah.
I think that this is just a division where there's a lot of teams that are very close to one another. It's why, again, going back to one of the things we've discussed, I did bet Jacksonville to win the division. So that, to me, is why the Titans get the edge over the Patriots. The ability or the need to upend the team at the top, it is much more likely that I think Tennessee, if everything hits for them, can do it as opposed to what the Patriots can.
Okay, that's fair. And obviously the Buffalo Bills are the differentiator there, and I completely agree with you. But if the Bills were to have, and I would never root for this, but just a thought, had an injury-plagued season like they had a couple years ago or like the 49ers had last year, I think is great evidence of a team that was so good and then faltered. Potentially that could open the door because I don't believe in Miami. I don't believe in the New York Jets in any way, shape, or form. So that could open the door for a Patriots team with new guidance in Mike Vrabel,
so you're kinda
a young
coming
quarterback
down,
in Drake May, who's got some offensive weapons that are starting to form.
Keep it going.
I'm talking you up too much. Stephon Diggs, I like Kyle Williams, Travion Henderson that you bring in there defensively. You should, based on the overhaul, get some immediate returns on defense and a coach in Vrabel who believes so firmly in that side of the ball and is going to try to overhaul it in a positive way. So, yeah, why not?
See?
Why not the Patriots?
Smelling the playoff team here, baby.
Then we both have the Raiders at five?
We do both have the Raiders at five.
Raiders at five.
The problem with, and I think you probably agree with this, is where we're at, I think there is a line of demarcation. Like the Raiders are, I think, clearly better than that of the Giants, the Saints, and the Browns. I also think
I don't think they can win the division.
Yeah, and I also think they're, in terms of, again, the actual exercise, going from worst to first, in a much worse position than that of the 49ers, the Bears, the Patriots, and the Titans. So I think that safely puts them there at number five.
Yes.
Right? In terms of these teams that could do it. I will say really quickly, I do like the upside of the Raiders. Like, I understand it. Ashton Gentry, the reports from Indy Camp have been tremendous. Same thing with the rookie camp. I am a Geno Smith truther as well. I think many are. Look, when you give him a very good offensive line and keep him upright, he is among the best quarterbacks in the National Football League. Playing indoors has been beneficial to him. If the upside hits with this offense, they're going to be pretty effective. The problem is I think their defense is going to be abhorrent, and the other teams in front of them, Denver, San Diego, or excuse me, San Diego. Wow, it's been a long time since I've done that. L.A. and Kansas City. What are the odds they can jump all three of those teams?
And I told you in that division already, I like the Chargers, but I think the Chargers and Broncos, as the odds would indicate, have much better chances still of leading that. I mean, the Raiders are 20-1 shot in the division where things sit right now. Kansas City, a -120 favorite. Last 30 seconds, the last, since 2020, we've seen six teams that have also gone from first to worst in their divisions. The 49ers, of course, being that team last year. Mm-hmm. Any team you think could take a tumble?
Ooh, from first to worst?
Yeah.
Looking at it initially. All right, I got one for you.
Okay.
The Rams.
Oh, well.
I mean, you know, so you get from first to worst, though. You could fall that, especially if the injuries happen.
That's interesting.
With
I like the Rams this year.